Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the third and final hour of the Inside Scoop. This hour, I want to concentrate on the media. Some would say it is the fourth estate, our fourth branch of government, that when the presidency and both houses of the legislative branch are controlled by Republicans, when the Supreme Court will have a majority of Trumpists, who will be left to protect our civil liberties? Well, it must be the fourth branch of government. The press. Donald Trump obviously fears that as well, which is why yesterday he had a sit down with 30 to 40 very important big shots in the media. These are important people. Chuck Todd, Lester Holt of NBC, George Stephanopoulos of ABC, Martha Raddatz, who was there, who you may remember, conducted the second debate, CBS's Nora O'Donnell, John Dickerson, Charlie Rose, Fox News's Bill Shine, MSNBC's Phil Griffin, CNN's Jeff Zucker, and Aaron Burnett. You may recall Aaron Burnett, who's a friend that's been grilled by Donald Trump. In any case,
the unofficial reports are that it was like a effing firing squad.
There are no official reports. Donald Trump demanded that the entire broadcast, entire conversation, be off the record. But Trump apparently started with Jeff Zucker, the head of CNN, and said, quote, "I hate your network. Everyone at CNN is a liar, and you should be ashamed." The source said the meeting was a total disaster. TV execs and anchors went in there thinking they'd be discussing what access they would have to the Trump administration. But instead, Trump dressed them down. The meeting took place in a big boardroom, and Trump kept saying, quote, "We're in a room of liars, the deceitful, dishonest media who got it all wrong." He talked about how angry he was at Martha Raddatz for how she conducted the second debate. She was the only host in the room. Lester Holt was in the room as well. And when reporters asked, how do you propose we work with you? Apparently, he would not answer. So this is it. He's taken over three branches of government. He's now going after the fourth branch. You may have heard the New York Times was going to have a meeting with him, but they insisted that at least part of the meeting be on the record, that they'd be able to report on it. And then, of course, Donald Trump canceled the New York Times meeting, but apparently thinking that, maybe I shouldn't be this censoring of the press. Apparently now the meeting is back on. We will see what happens. At the same time, the Trump Foundation has quietly released, guess what? Tax returns. The tax returns, the missing tax returns, the supposedly under audit tax returns have been released by the foundation. Actually, they're required by law to release them because the foundation, unlike Donald Trump, is supposed to be a charity. And in their tax filing, they admit they broke the law. They admit they violated the whole legal doctrine of charities and used the charities to funnel tons of money to Donald Trump himself. So Donald Trump stole money from the charity. While Hillary Clinton has been condemned, you just heard Wilbur from Arizona, condemned for taking money from foreign sources that went to help people in Haiti and Africa, Donald Trump steals from his own charity, puts it in his pocket, admits it's illegal, and basically says, what are you going to do about it? He admits committing fraud against hundreds of people at Trump University, pays $25 million to make it go away. What are you going to do about it? The question is, will the media do anything about it? Will they be cowed? I criticize the media as well, a media that spent three times as much on Hillary's emails as they did on all of her policy issues put together. So I'm not saying that the media is somehow above criticism, but I'm seeing surprisingly little
about the Trump Foundation's admission that they are a criminal enterprise. Admissions that they broke the law. Admission, I want to know if they intentionally broke the law. I think they claim it was an accident that Donald Trump stole from his own charity. And I want to know more about how much Donald Trump is using his power as president-elect to steal. We know that he is using his power to try to get Scotland to help him make money on his golf resorts there. But it's not just Scotland. It's Argentina. He's been working with Argentinian business interests. In fact, one of Argentina's most influential television programs reported that in a congratulations call from the president of Argentina, President Macri, Trump asked for Macri's support to build an office tower in Buenos Aires. Nice. He also, his daughter Ivanka sat in on the meeting with the Prime Minister of Japan. And guess what? Her jewelry company is promoting a $10,000 bracelet that she wore during her appearance with her father. They are trying to milk us for all we're worth. And the question is whether anyone in America will care. I know that Donald Trump supporters don't give a damn about his racism or the fact that he sexually assaults women. They don't give a damn about immigrants. They're fine with horribly anti-Semitic things from Steve Bannon, horribly anti-Muslim things. They're fine with the racism of stop and frisk, the idea that basically any black person should be arrested for any reason, even if they haven't broken the law. I get that. I get that they don't give a damn about their fellow citizens. But do they care when the President of the United States is planning to steal America blind? Isn't that something that should bother everybody of every race, color, creed, of every political persuasion? It's just basic corruption. It's graft. It goes to the heart of, well, honestly, the reason why we have an impeachment clause in the Constitution. 888-48-MARK, 888-486-2275. Old Faithful, Michael from the Bronx, has been holding all this time. Michael, you're back on the air.
And it's great to be back with you, Mark. And I got to say, everything you just laid out, if I had to give a nickname to Donald Trump, it would probably be he's the Richard Nixon of the 21st century. But you know something?
You know, I got to tell you something, Michael. Nixon had the decency to cover up his crimes. He had the decency to try to hide his crimes. Donald Trump is saying, I'm going to openly steal you blind, and you're not going to do anything about it. He has much more effrontery, much more gall, audacity, chutzpah, call it whatever you want. Much more
very
than Richard
arrogant.
Nixon. Yeah, exactly. Nixon knew he was committing crimes and tried to hide them. Donald Trump knows he's committing crimes and says, yeah, I'm committing them because the president can do whatever he wants.
Yes, he's someone who's going to have a wake-up call besides his supporters. But going back to what I was saying before is that we are now a nation in which we cannot even raise a legitimate question towards Trump, towards Pence, towards any of his supporters without being blasted and attacked and say that, and we're told that you owe us an apology and blah, blah, blah. You know, it's something, they're the ones that started, if you see something, say something. So I, for one, see something, I'm going to say something. I don't give a rat's rump if they don't like it, if it's the truth, truth be spoken, and they ain't getting an apology from me. That's number one. Number two, you mentioned about the, amongst the cabinet picks, the one for Attorney General.
Jeff Sessions,
who has been on record for being a real blasted racist. And
that's right. He's a racist.
As far as I'm concerned, Trump, and especially my former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani are all in the same company. And the thing that scares me is there are still police brutality cases. I'm talking criminal prosecutions that are still pending in the various states. Sessions would be the type, as an attorney general, even though the state prosecutors going on, they say, we're taking over this case because we believe this mounts to a federal investigation. And then the same Sessions will say, we find no basis for prosecution or charges. Or
you're right, Michael. Listen, Jeff Sessions
and
opposes
I can cite,
the voting... No, you're right,
sorry,
Michael.
I can cite... I can cite two cases in which that's happened here in New York City, committed by Giuliani, while mayor, and even a former governor, George Pataki, who was also Republican.
I hear you, Michael. Listen, Senator Jeff Sessions of Alabama has said that he opposes the Voting Rights Act. He basically is saying, I support Jim Crow laws. I support preventing blacks from voting. He has been said by his deputy, Attorney General, who is black, that he said to his deputy Attorney General, he said, don't talk that way, you might upset white people. He's also calls blacks, grown black men, he calls them boys. He has said that the KKK was okay with him until some of them supported marijuana legalization. I mean, Jeff Sessions is a nasty, racist human being. And so nasty that the Senate rejected his federal judgeship 30 years ago when proposed by President Ronald Reagan. This is not a normal fellow. And you're absolutely right. We have always relied on the Justice Department to protect us when local governments do not. When local governments round up black people and put them in jail for no reason or shoot unarmed black men, when the local authorities won't prosecute, we've always had the federal government as a backup. The only reason why we succeeded in the 1960s against, let's face it, local government that was murdering the people registering blacks to vote. That's what happened in Mississippi Burning. The local sheriff lured those three young kids into a KKK ambush to kill them. When that happened, Robert Kennedy sent down the Justice Department. The role of the Justice Department in protecting minorities from abuse, oppression, from local government has always been there. And now we have the fox in charge of the chicken coop. We have an open, avowed racist in Senator Jeff Sessions of Alabama saying, in effect, black people, you're on your own. Black people, if you're put in jail and there's no reason to convict you, yeah, I'm not getting in there. So now we're going to have to rely on local judges. And I have to tell you, local judges, particularly in the South, are often chosen by the racist people who live down there. We are going back to the 1960s. And Michael, what we're going to have to do, you and me, and I'm not too worried about you in the Bronx because you got a good liberal mayor there in Mayor Bill de Blasio. But I'm really worried about the South. I'm really worried about my home state of Tennessee. I'm worried about Alabama and Arkansas and Georgia and Mississippi and South Carolina. And we may have to go back and march just like happened in the 1960s. Because in the 1960s, civil rights workers weren't protected either. But the march was on people's conscience. And we may have to go back to the Pettus Bridge in Selma, Alabama, and refight the same fight that Martin Luther King did 50 years ago. And it's shameful that we have to fight these battles all over again. But I know that you will join me, Michael, and I'll join you on that bridge. If we have to refight the civil rights movement, then let's refight the civil rights movement. Let's get out in the streets. Let's defend the right of every American to have civil rights, every American to vote, every American to be innocent until proven guilty, every American to be free of police violence. We're not going back. And I'll be proud to join Black Lives Matter or any other protest demanding equality under the law. So thank you for bringing that up, Michael. I'm going to take a break, take some other calls. 888-48-MARK, 888-48-6275. Let's talk about the media, too, and what their role should be. We'll be right back after this.
He's a Bible-quoting, Constitution-loving, flag-waving, red-blooded, liberal American. He's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275.
I'm your host, Mark Levine. Sometimes I need to hear music like that to make me feel better about my country. We're in big trouble, folks. And the real question is what we can, if anything, do about it. Toll-free number, 888-48-MARK, 888-488-6275. Let's go to Paul in Washington State on line one. Hey, Paul, what's your answer? What can we do here?
Well, the first thing is fear not. That's the first thing.
Okay.
The strategy, it seems to me, is clear. Donald Trump is so scatterbrained. He's so unfocused. Listen, this guy, if he's tweeting against the cast of Hamilton and SNL,
right.
I got news for you. There's going to be over 200 weeks of SNL in the term of his presidency. So he's going to be busy reacting to them. My suggestion is this. Relentless and merciless attacks, jeers, mocking. These people can't take it. Have you noticed the absolute just apoplectic reaction from Trump and all of the Trump supporters of any criticism? Can you imagine this coming from Barack Obama? Over the last 8 years, as hard as they poured it on Obama, who kept his cool, I guarantee you.
He completely kept his cool, even when they were saying he wasn't even born in the United States. The thing about the criticisms of Donald Trump is that they're accurate. I mean, just now it was released that he got his foundation got a $150,000 payment from a Ukrainian steel magnate, and that he basically took the money himself, so self-dealing, which is a clear violation of the Constitution. But all
right.
Apart from that, this is the kind of thing in far more stark detail that they were saying about Hillary Clinton, lock her up. Only she didn't take money directly. You know, her foundation took it and gave it to people in need. But, you know, I'm just curious to know why it's been – I think this has been underplayed, and this is very serious stuff.
It is, and I'll tell you something, is that the Trump supporters, I have thought this from the beginning, these people actually they railed about the executive orders of Barack Obama. These people actually really do want a dictator. They want somebody who's going to push people around, the people in this country that they don't like. And it's not just – undocumented aliens, it's other Americans that they don't like.
Right.
He's a conservative, Michael Medved, he broadcasts from out here, was saying today that the Trump vote is a vote against political correctness. Well, I got news for you. If political correctness is gone, you've got no rights to demand an apology because some actor addressed the vice president-elect from the stage.
By the way, Hamilton addressed them very respectfully.
Yeah, exactly.
What he says is that I hope that the vice president recognizes that Americans come in all kinds of differences and respects those differences. That's what they said.
I'm not sure what
is apologetic about that. Is he saying that Pence will absolutely not treat Americans equally under the law? Pence has a right to be racist? Is that what Donald Trump's saying?
No,
apologize for telling him to treat Americans fairly? I am against treating Americans fairly. I'll tell you what, hang on with me. I got to take a break, Paul, but I want you to hang on with me. I got some other callers as well. 888-48-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back right after this.
Back to the Aggressive Progressive, Mark Levin.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levin. Just a half an hour left to figure out what we can do about the Donald Trump presidency. Apparently, we have a clip from the Hamilton cast that we were just talking about, speaking to the vice president-elect, to Pence. Is that ready to go, Mark? Can we play that?
Yes.
Go ahead. Let's play it.
And Vice President-elect Pence, I see you walking out, but I hope you will hear us just a few more moments. There's nothing to move here, ladies and gentlemen. There's nothing to move here. We're all here sharing a story of love. We have a message for you, sir. We hope that you will hear us out. And I encourage everybody to pull out your phones and tweet and post, because this message needs to be spread far and wide, okay? Vice President-elect Pence, we welcome you and we truly thank you for joining us here at Hamilton and American Music. We really do. We, sir,
We are the diverse America who are alarmed and anxious that your new administration will not protect us, our planet, our children, our parents, or defend us and uphold our inalienable rights, sir. But we truly hope that this show has inspired you to uphold our American values and to work on behalf of all of us. All of us. Told by a diverse group of men, women of different colors, creeds, and orientations.
So there you have it. What was the offensive thing that Hamilton told the vice president-elect? They said, Pence, we hope you'll have an America that works for all of us. Now, I want you to really think about this. Donald Trump said it is offensive to ask the president or vice president to work for all of us. He is offended that anyone would demand that every American be the concern of the president. He thinks equality under the law, which of course is in the 14th Amendment of the Constitution, is offensive. He wants them to apologize. Let that sit in your head for just a little bit. Paul from Washington State, thank you for bringing that up. You're back on the line.
Well, yeah, it's amazing. I think what really bothered him is that how dare anybody put me or my vice president on the spot to insist that you protect all of everyone's rights. I think it's just being put on the spot. I think what we can expect for sure, bullying tactics. They are going to bully people and try to make people afraid. I was disappointed that there was an actress or a model who did an impression of Melania Trump. Was it the other day, yesterday, or sometime this weekend? And then she felt she had to apologize for that. That's what they're going to do. You got to remind people that the president of the United States doesn't have any apologies coming. This is free speech, and he has to separate himself from his role as the president, who is obligated and sworn to protect. Uphold and protect the Constitution, including the First Amendment, and his personal feelings as a citizen. So,
yeah, I got to tell you something. SNL, Saturday Night Live, has mocked bitterly mocked. I mean, really, some harsh stuff. Every single president from Gerald Ford up to President Obama. That's what SNL does. That's what satire does. And it's amazing to me because I actually thought the Hamilton cast was extremely respectful. They said, thank you for coming here. Welcome. And just saying, hey, remember, look out for all Americans. And you're right about the bullying, Paul. You're absolutely right. That's why he brought in 35 members of the press, to very high-ranked members, to dress them down. And I just have to hope and think that these people will not be cowed and will not allow, if anything, I would hope that meeting made them basically gear up and say, all right, we got to do our jobs better.
You know,
we got to give more information. We got to get this guy in detail because we're not going to let this happen in America.
You know, Mark, there's one important point here. If what they're trying to set a bar or a standard that if they demand apology for a respectful address,
That's right.
In other words, this is like, you know, I was a teacher for a long time, and of course, we've all been in classrooms where the teacher wouldn't let you say a word no matter how nice it was. That kind of teacher is going to have a lot of problems. So what they're doing is saying, you know, something that even comes across respectful is not going to be tolerated. How much worse will they not tolerate something that's a little bit more mocking and a little bit more satirical? That's why I say we've got to be on this guy like a swarm of hornets. Too many to deal with one at a time. He's just going to have to either. I think the guy's going to go nuts. I really do. I think he's. I don't even think he wants the job. Honestly, I wish.
I don't think he ever did. He told Chris Christie he didn't think he would last past October 2015. He said several times in interviews he never thought he was going to win. He did this to promote his business. He did this the same reason Ben Carson and Mike Huckabee, they want to sell books. He did it. He thought he would get more business. He was shocked more than anyone when he won. You could see it on election night. No, he never, he's the dog that caught the car, right? The dog that barks exactly. And chases the car, and suddenly the car stops, and the dog just keeps barking because the dog doesn't know what to do with the car. He didn't want to actually catch the car. He just wanted to chase the car.
Right.
Well, you're absolutely right. I love your idea about the swarm. We the people are too many in number for him to put us all down, and we got to keep fighting, because when you stop fighting, that's when we become a dictatorship. That's when we become Putin's Russia.
Don't fear this guy at all. He's like all bullies.
Keep fighting.
He's a lot more bark than he is bite.
Fair enough. Thank you, Paul, for your very, very good phone call. Let me go to Susie in El Paso, Texas, on line 4. Hey, Susie, how are you?
Good afternoon. This is a great topic. But what we need to do is stand up to this bully, because America isn't like it was years and years and years ago. And we need to put pressure on the media and make them start covering the and flood the media's Facebook pages, do their Twitter, and just go after them. But I have a question, too. How can the Electoral College vote for Trump, knowing he has committed impeachable offenses? He's not going to last.
This
country can't last 4 years with him. I don't think we can last until January the 20th, 2017 with Trump. He's unfit.
The people chosen in the Electoral College, the people on the ballot, were chosen because of their loyalty to Donald Trump and the Republican Party. Their loyalty to Donald Trump exceeds their loyalty to America. Their loyalty to the Republican Party exceeds their loyalty to the Constitution. They're voting for him for the same reason, let's face it, that a lot of Russians like Vladimir Putin, prefer a dictator. A lot of Germans liked Adolf Hitler, too. Let's not pretend they didn't, right? A lot of dictators get a lot of support. There are people who think that it's a lot easier to live under a dictator. And let's face it, there are a lot of racist, sexist, horrible people out there.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm afraid the Electoral College is filled with those people. And I'm afraid that we don't have much of a chance there. I'm sorry.
Yeah, we got to fight back, and we need to put the pressure, and we need to start boycotting the news media and let them have it, rip them apart on their Facebook pages. That's the only way, because they are...
Yeah, I wouldn't boycott them, but I do strongly agree that we should be critical of the media if they ever let anything go. And you're absolutely right. Keep doing it.
And the only one that really is really going after them right now is Joy Reid and Lawrence O'Donnell.
Well, no, actually, you're right on TV, but if you look, the Washington Post and the New York Times have written some really strong articles that I encourage you to read. Newspapers are not dead yet, and we need to respect them because they do some of the best investigative reporting that's left in America. Thank you for your call, Susie. I really appreciate it. Let me go to John in Albuquerque on line 2. Hey, John, how are you?
Oh, fine. The reason I was calling, I was listening, and I heard a comment about the people rising up. However, I think the same tactic that has been used in the past will be continued, and that is if you throw a bone to the people feel satisfied, and thus they become complacent. I think.
Well, that's how Adolf Hitler and Vladimir Putin have done it, right? That's how
they
did it.
And I think media and press has become so mushy now, more geared for entertainment than hard news. Because if you were a student of history, you would know about Hitler. You would know about all of these things. And yet Trump is able to rise above that, even with double standards being shown. So
yeah,
you don't even have to know
history. You could just look at the current times. I mean, Vladimir Putin was chosen democratically. You could look for recently, there's a guy in Turkey. Now, Turkey is a long-standing democracy for 70 years. But its leader, whose name is Erdogan, took power democratically and then slowly began closing down a free press, using his criticism, using his bullying, and slowly taking power while, you know, giving the populace all kinds of, goodies. And now he even had a coup against him, and the coup failed. I mean, I fear for our future unless we do, as frankly Paul from Washington said, and just keep up the pressure. Keep up the pressure. Susie said it too. On media websites, marches in the streets, satire is a very powerful thing to do. At some point, when our checks and balances are gone, and we don't have a legislature or a judiciary branch or even states that we respect anymore, then it's up to we the people. And I hope people remember that in the 1960s, all of the establishment supported the war in Vietnam. All of the establishment, or most of the establishment, supported Jim Crow laws and racism. And it was up to we the people, mostly young people, frankly, who came out in the streets in massive protests in the 1960s. And the real power of the 60s was the power of the people to change the elites. And if we have to go to the streets again, I'm ready to go out in the streets. Let's do it. We have the numbers. We are the majority.
Right, but part of that is how much will it take for that pressure to build up? Because even with the last election and looking at things, there was not enough pressure to keep this from happening, even with all of the press reports that kept coming out. So part of it is, yes, that may be a fact, but how much pressure will America have to be under before it gets there? In other words, how much will the middle class in mid-America have to be affected by no jobs or Trump not keeping his promises, but
John,
fail against him?
I'll tell you, what happens to me, and I'm a student of history, is it just seems time and time again, we Democrats save America only to present it to Republicans who destroy it. Right, Bill Clinton gave us the best economy in my lifetime, right? And Al Gore was ready to continue it, and he was kind of boring, and he was very smart, but kind of a technocrat, and he wasn't someone we wanted to have a beer with. And so America was like, hey, let's try this fun guy, George Bush, who ruins the economy, takes us into the greatest depression since the Great Depression. President Obama works very, very hard to take us out of that second Great Depression, and he takes our unemployment, which is over 9%, it's now below 5%. Inflation is below 2%. Wages are rising. The stock market's at a record. President Obama dug us out of the ditch and painfully crawled us to the top. He saved the auto industry. He saved the banking industry. He created more jobs than any president since Bill Clinton. And now that we're doing fine, I think a lot of people fell in the exact same trap of 2000. Frankly, a lot of young people who didn't remember the election of 2000, and they thought, don't give Obama a third term through Hillary. Let's try this new guy. He's exciting. He says funny things. He says things that aren't politically correct, and they don't realize how much damage he can do. And I feel like we're trapped in a time warp or Groundhog Day where the exact same thing happens over and over again. And I got to tell you, John, millennials, many of them didn't vote. Many, lots of liberals didn't get out and vote. There were some Bernie supporters who were so pure and high and mighty that because they didn't get their first choice candidate, they're like, I don't care who wins. Well, now you're seeing there was a difference between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. She wasn't perfect, but he's the apocalypse.
Right.
And I'm afraid that he's going to have to really damage this country until people realize, oh, we made a mistake. And that just, I'm so sorry to see us repeating history this way. It just, it angers me to no end.
Right. And I agree with you on that. And, looking at it, hopefully the lessons that can be learned from this, but it's going to be a painful lesson.
Yes, it will.
And I can already see that in who he's surrounding himself with.
Yes, it will. I'm afraid it's going to be very painful, and I hate that we have to learn these lessons over and over and over again. But we're going to stick together. We are the majority. Hopefully we get rid of the damn Electoral College, and we are going to have to take this nation back. We're going to have to. Now, I'm afraid you may quote me here, but we're going to have to make America great again. Great like it was under President Obama. Hey, thanks for your call, John.
All
I appreciate
right.
it.
All right.
I've got other callers on the line. Stick around, callers. I promise I'll get to you. We got one more segment left. 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Right back after this. back to the Inside Scoop. I got four callers in 4 minutes, so I'm going to try to take this as quickly as I can. Jake in Eureka, California, line three, has been holding on a long time. How are you, Jake?
Hi, Mark. Well, I think we all remember from the Bush administration the doctrine of preemptive warfare. I think it's about time that we progressives come up with a new doctrine, preemptive impeachment. And
how do we do that?
For those House Republicans. Well, I think as soon as possible, as soon as that guy's in, we already have impeachable offenses, and there'll be more to follow, no doubt, because this guy's stupid and corrupt. Trump is a criminal, and he's going to put himself in a position where the Republicans, they want to be reelected in 2 years, are going to want to consider impeachment. And another reason to consider impeachment is the burgeoning California independence movement. Because I tell you, if this ballot proposition is on the ballot in California, and if Trump is still president at the time, there's a very good chance that the people of California will vote to secede from the union.
Well, I know it's one of the largest economies in the world, and I can think of, California would be a fine country on its own. Unfortunately, due to the Civil War, we probably can't allow that. But I do appreciate your call. Let me go to Paula in Massachusetts on line four. Hey, Paula.
Oh, hi there. Thank you for taking my call, Mark.
Sure.
My call is about, first of all, I'm a lesbian. I'm married in the state of Massachusetts, and I have legal rights. And I have a lot of friends who live in states where marriage between same-sex couples is not recognized. I think that Donald Trump is kind of like letting this go because he doesn't want the fight. And I think that for gay people, the real danger is Mike Pence. Who, with a conservative Supreme Court, would do everything they could to federally overturn gay marriage.
So no question. I'll tell you, one of the things that I was very disappointed in the vice presidential debate is the only was one thing that Mike Pence was famous for, as far as I was concerned, as governor of Indiana before he became a vice presidential candidate, and that was for the dramatically anti-gay things that he endorsed in Indiana. And other than the LGBT community, most Americans don't even seem to know that. So, Paul, I'm going to ask you to spread the word about Mike Pence, because you're absolutely right. He is a danger in and of himself. Let me go to Reggie in Georgia on line five. Reggie, go ahead.
Yes. How you doing, Mike? Happy Tuesday to you.
Happy Tuesday.
Do you think that the cast of both the play Hamilton and SNL should tell Donald Trump to bite them, blow them, and kiss their ass?
Yeah, I think they are, and they will, and they should, and the tradition of satire and speaking truth to power will only and should only grow in America. I think SNL should get even tougher on him, and let's fight back. We the people are in charge, and we have the right to criticize our president. Thanks, Reggie. Last caller, Charlie in Phoenix, line one. Go ahead.
Hi, I had a question, and I got another one behind it if I can get it in there really quick. Wasn't Bill Clinton elected both times without the popular vote?
No. Bill Clinton won the popular vote both times.
No. He won the electoral twice.
No, he won the popular vote. He got more votes than George Bush. He got more votes than Robert Dole. And Hillary Clinton got more votes than Donald Trump.
No,
Al Gore got more votes than Bush Jr.
I'm talking about Clinton.
Yeah, Bill Clinton in 92 and 96. In 92 and 96 got more votes than the second opponent. Now, he ran against two opponents. He ran against George Bush Sr. and Ross Perot. And he ran against Bob Dole and Ross Perot.
All right,
but he got the most votes, both elections.
You're right about the media. The media is important, and it has to be a functional part of the deal. But, what I hear all the time is, from this station on, it's just all hate baiting. I mean, when you use words like Hitler and Nazi and racist and,
Charlie, I got to tell you, I don't use those words lightly. When I have a president of the United States who it puts two doors down, a guy who's built up an entire movement based on Nazism and hatred, when I have a president of the United States appointing an open racist as attorney general, when you have a president of the United States picking all the media in the room and attacking them and trying to cow them and trying them not to publish stories that are inappropriate. When I have a president of the United States, that are critical, I should say, when the president of the United States wants to put up a registry of all people from Muslim countries and cites, frankly, they've been citing the Japanese internment camps as grounds for it, then we have reason to worry about fascism in America. This is Mark Levine signing off.